This episode brought to you by Own the Gray podcast. Discover how others age with attitude at ownthegray.ca.
Welcome to Lunch with a Healer. I'm your host, Dr. Susan Hoffman. This week, I'm featuring a conversation I had with Corby Mitlide. Corby's certifications include Certified Tarot Master and Certified Professional Tarot Reader, member of the American Tarot Association and the Tarot Guild, and ordained minister of the Sanctuary of the Beloved. A trained medium and past life specialist, Corby is a featured channel in Robert Schwartz's breakthrough series, Your Soul's Plan, Your Soul's Gift, and Your Soul's Love, and is herself the author of Clean Out Your Life Closet, The Psychic Yellow Brick Road, and You've Got the Magic, Who Needs a Genie? Corby prides herself on being a practical intuitive. People say sitting with her is a comfortable, safe experience that feels like they're with a longtime friend, not a stranger spouting a bunch of mystical hoodoo and pretense. And she doesn't believe in bad news. We have opportunities we can go after and challenges to get past, she says firmly. After dealing 3 times with breast cancer, I learned that firsthand, my job is to give you the tools and courage to deal with both situations. Everything else is free will and up to you. Corby is funny, authentic, and full of wisdom. And without further ado, here's my conversation.
The best conversations happen when we're having lunch with our friends, especially when one is a healer. Pull up a chair and join us to expand your knowledge and open your mind.
Today we're talking with author and coach Corby Mitlide about her book, Clean Out Your Life Closet, Take Charge of Your Life, and Love Your Journey, which is a wonderful title, intriguing, and welcome, Corby, to the show.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
My pleasure. Let's start with introducing yourself to my listeners and discuss how you got to where you are today in the healing realm, because I always find that an interesting story.
Okay. I have to macrame together my 2 30-second elevator talks.
Okay.
What I do full time is I am a certified tarot master, past life specialist, psychic medium, and channel. But that's not a turban in Madame Hoo-Ha WikiWoo. It is intuitive counseling because a lot of my life has been roller coaster, no breaks. Dysfunctional family growing up. Mother was an alcoholic, cross addicted with barbiturates. Everyone in my family was in the medical profession. I was a writer and an actress and a visionary, and I could have stood on the dining room table and recited Shakespeare. They wouldn't have gotten me. Left an Ivy League university after 2 years. This was back in the 70s when it was pass-fail and you could take Swedish and basket weaving and still graduate. I needed something much more structured. But because I would not be satisfied with anything but who was I really, I had a huge series of jobs, actress, author, inspirational speaker, video producer, executive recruiter, legal assistant, writer for a graphic novel series, anything I could put my hands to bring in money. I had 2 very short, bad marriages. My first husband started physically abusing me and I left. The second one just decided he didn't want to be married. And so he dumped me in Atlanta, Georgia, and moved to California. The third one that I have now, he's the good guy, 20 years. I was born by 11. I had a Dolly Parton figure. I've had the cancer dance 3 times in 2004, a year and a half after I married the right guy. Double mastectomy, ovaries out, went from the Dolly Parton figure to a fat fire plug with permanent side effects. It has not been easy. I have had to live the examined life. But what that does is it tells me that I'm not special. My readers can do what I do. And I have a deep amount of compassion for what people go through because been there, done that.
Wow. I'm sure most people just say, wow. But I have to tell you, you are special. And I'll tell you why. Because you used all of the adversity to journey through it and realize who you are authentically and not give up. become a victim. There are so many other pathways you could have chosen, Corby. So I beg to differ. You are special. So that's how you got to the healing realm. I imagine you went through a lot of inner work through the years.
Yes, you have to. You really do. That's the whole point of the examined life. What's the formula? Something is happening I really don't want to have to deal with, but I have to. First thing, what can I learn from it? Second thing for me, because I'm a teacher by nature, how can I teach with it? And then you have to say next. Don't say stay stuck in your story, because that's when you get cemented into the pity party.
I agree 100%. But it's so easy for you to say, for me to say, if I'm trying to talk to somebody, you know, those exact words, but it's so hard to get out of your own way. But that's what, you know, your book is about. So what inspired you to write Clean Out Your Life Closet?
In 2016, I asked clients, what are the things you really stumble on all the time? And the four things they came out with were clarity, adaptability, simplicity, and making friends with stress. Now, we all know about self-help books. In fact, I often joke that I will give $50 cold cash to anyone who can legitimately raise their hand and say, I have never bought a self-help book in my life. Because we're taught to. My first self-help book I bought in 1968 at age 13. Yes, my darlings, that tells you how old I am. And I remember to this day, the first paragraph. Judy has a groovy wardrobe. Her makeup is far out and she has fab hair. But nobody likes Judy because Judy's fat. Right there in one paragraph, you have taken an impressionable adolescent and said, you are completely worthless unless you're skinny.
No, but that's a self-help book?
That in 1968, that was a self-help book for teenagers.
What was the title of that book?
I don't even remember. I just remember it that much. And that's how we're taught.
Yeah.
We don't know, so we have to ask the experts.
Yeah.
And if we can't do it the way the experts say, we're wrong, we're bad. Now, when I was doing the research for writing my book, there was a book out there. I remember who it's by, but I won't say. And she said, you have to get up every morning like at 4:30 and do yoga and avoid food with leptin. It's bad. I'm sorry. If you are a single mom with two preschool kids and a job in Milwaukee, you are not going to do that.
Right.
So the whole premise of my book is you've got your own answers. And the way I do it is each chapter, here's some of the dumb things I did. And here's maybe a client story. And then here is a thought or two. But at the end of the chapter, you've got the adventure pages where I pose usually two or three questions that you cannot answer by turning to page 89. You have to look inside you. For instance, on the chapter, Why Perfect Isn't What You Think It Is, what are the questions? Has perfect been a friend or foe to you in your life? Why? When did the search for perfection stop you from doing something important? How so? Think of a challenging situation and find three perfect things about it. How do your feelings about the situation change? By the end of that book, if you have done all the questions at the end of each chapter, that becomes your personal life manual. And even if your best buddy bought the book the same day, did all the questions on the same day, you would each have a personal manual, wildly different, because it truly is based on your life experience, not mine. And that is what gives people the internal power to make their own changes. They stop thinking they're wrong. They realize they're allowed to know.
Beautiful. And we're going to go through all this, but just to make it clear, you do then talk about in your book how to release this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because you have to be given modalities. I mean, the right one is a very personal thing. There are so many out there. It's interesting because, well, you're right. I mean, my first self-help book was I'm Okay, You're Okay, which was in the 70s. I think that was the first big one, bestseller. Mm-hmm. And then I've just gone from there. I've got hundreds. But on your own journey, did any books help you?
Absolutely. the two books that I always point to that got me through three bouts of breast cancer, two divorces, and the death of my parents are by someone named Barry Neal Kaufman. His nickname is Bears. He and his wife, Samaria, are very well known for their work with the Option Institute in Massachusetts. The Institute is virtually closed now. They do online courses, but Bears and Samaria are 80. So it isn't the place it used to be. But the two books that are seminal for me, the first one is called To Love Is to Be Happy With, and the second is called Happiness is a Choice. And they taught me about stimulus belief response, which comes down to three questions. What am I X about? Sad, depressed, fearful, whatever. Why am I X about that? And the magic question we never ask ourselves, what do I think would happen if we stopped being X about that? It gives you permission to change. That's the key to everything. Willing to change.
Absolutely. So let's get into it. You did mention already about the four areas, clarity, adaptability, simplicity, and stress.
Right.
So if you don't mind, I would love to go through these because they're very important. So let's start with clarity. So what do you mean for my listeners? What are you talking about when you say clarity?
I use the example of a telescope. When you are just looking at the night sky, sometimes it's beautiful, but things are smudgy. But if you are willing to focus with a telescope, you begin to see the brilliance of Venus, Mars. You can see stars. You can see meteorites, all kinds of things. So clarity in life is you focus your telescope. You make sure that you put it on the things you want to do, not what you don't. You keep it clean by getting rid of time wasters and people time wasters, getting rid of people that I say are in Neverland. They're the ones who go, oh, no, it won't work. It'll never happen. I'm not sure you should. You know, my two magic phrases for them are thank you for sharing. You may think that if you wish. Then I go on. You find your tribe. You find the people that believe in you. You find the people who do what you do, and you lift yourself up from there. The other example is, think about a ballerina. When she is pirouetting, she has that spot on the wall, and she holds it until her neck's going to break, and then she whips her head around and gets it again. If she doesn't, she'll be dizzy and fall on her butt within 12 seconds. So don't fall on your butt in life. Find that spot. Find that clarity. Find what you want and hold it there. That's why you're probably going to ask next about the three-legged stool of clarity.
Well, you are reading my mind.
The three-legged stool of clarity. Getting clear on your purpose, getting clear in relationships, and getting clear with spirit. If you have those three things clear, it's a good steady stool to sit on or stand on to make your life move forward in a positive direction. Okay. The reason why I start with getting clear on your purpose is because so many people don't know and they flounder. And when they're floundering, they can't focus. So, and you know, as an intuitive counselor, as a psychic medium, I can't tell you how many people come to me and say, tell me what my purpose is, please. No, I haven't lived your life, dealt with your challenges, found what you love. Only you can do that. So yes, I have a very deep dish consultation called Create Your Sentence of Passion, but you can do it on your own. Your sentence of passion is not who you are or what you do or even how you do it. It is your vapor trail. When you go skidding into heaven on bald tires and fumes in the tank, and God hands you a beer and says, so tell me, you go, this, I got to do this. Isn't it cool? Now, my sentence of passion is cross the bridge from fear to fearlessness and fly. When I can take somebody from point A to point B when they felt they couldn't make it, whack them on the shoulder, say, here are your wings. You don't need a flight plan. Now get. I'm living my bliss, and I've done it in every job I've had. It's not the job. It's the vapor trail. So how do you find that? Well, there are certain questions that you ask yourself. What crises have I lived through? What gives me comfort? How do I work best? Am I a word person? Am I a numbers person? Where does my happiness live? How do I want to be remembered? What has my life been about? And let's take an example, money. If you have had a rough time with money in your life. Does it make you a miser? You've got to get money any way you can. Or do you decide that money is not that important and you're going to see how frugally you can live? Or does it make you want to get money for other people in your same area, in the same level of need that you have because you viscerally know what it's like? So just saying my life has been about money is like saying this crayon is red. Is it scarlet? Is it crimson? Is it burgundy? There are so many shades. And as you answer these questions, you will find out what is most important to you because you will have themes. That's how you find your purpose. And that's why finding your purpose is important. When you find your purpose, when you know what you want your life to be about, you will choose relationships more carefully because it's not just with someone you love. You've got relationships with the Starbucks barista. You've got it with your post person. You've got it with your neighbor. And when you know what your life is about, you also know how best to connect with spirit because you know that however you believe, Christian, Jewish, Buddhist, Muslim, pagan, believe in Ralph the Wonder Dog, I don't care. Somebody up there loves you, wants the best for you, and is willing to work with you. And when you know what it is you want to create, being spirit's head, hands, and heart on earth, spirit says, gotcha, boom, and this stuff starts coming. So that is, for me, why finding your purpose actually helps build relationships and spirit even more strongly and even more quickly.
Does it also involve learning to listen to your intuition?
Yes, because that's why I tell everyone, you can do what I do, I'm not special. We're all wired the same way. And the example I use is, we all have 10 fingers. Everybody can kick out chopsticks with some effort. Some of us love music. And so we learn to read it, we practice, we do our scales, we get good. 1 in 50 million is Elton John.
Right.
So yes, you absolutely can use your intuition. You're born with it. Don't let anyone tell you you weren't. It is learning to trust yourself. And it's like any scientific experiment. In the beginning, I tell you, keep a notebook, write down. Today, I thought about going to the grocery store. Something told me not to take my usual route. Then you'll know, wow, if I had taken that route, there was an accident, would have slowed me down, or you didn't hear anything. You won't always know when your intuition is right. But as you keep notes, you'll begin to see the patterning.
Yeah.
Some people always know about phone calls. Some people know how to avoid accidents.
Absolutely.
Everyone's has something different.
That's a wonderful idea. And it takes 2 minutes. It's just getting in a habit of changing your habits. Right. All right. Let's go on to adaptability. In what way do we, and in which areas do we have to become more adaptable?
Every place. Every place. You know, I use a thing in there about perfect. And I use a couple of examples. One of them is, what's in your pantry? I love to cook. Always. Cooking is therapy for me. But I'm not slavish to a recipe. If I have 14 ingredients, but it needed 17, I see, can I adjust? Can I put in something different? We jokingly have recipes in the freezer that we call pork or beef or chicken, TR. TR stands for Teddy Roosevelt, who said, do what you can with what you have where you are. It means it's a one and done. It'll probably never appear on the table again, but it's good food.
Right.
When you can look at life like that, do what you can with what you have, where you are, you don't get so stuck. I mean, an example of perfectionism is people who want to write a book, but they're constantly revising that first chapter. Just write it and go on. Don't stop yourself with it's not good enough. Who says? Only you.
Well, it's that voice in your head.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. When you aren't slavish to what you think has to be right, it can change your life. And when perfect destroys good is probably my most meaningful chapter in the book. It's where I talk about my parents, Jerry and Frances, and my stepmother, Shirley, and my grandmother, Margaret. My mother was first generation American. Her parents could barely speak English. They lived above a little corner store that they ran. And my mother went to nursing school, was a good nurse. My father went to Hopkins Medical School, graduated in 2 years and 11 months because then he had to go, you know, occupation army after World War II. But the linchpin in this was his mother. My grandmother, we used to say she may be wrong, but she's never in doubt, which was true. Everything had to be done the way my grandmother wanted, or you were toast. You were. So when my father brought home my mother and said, "This is the girl I want to marry," my grandmother looked at her, screamed, "How could you do this to us?" and fainted. Because my mother was not rich. She was not beautiful. She didn't bring any cachet to the marriage. And so for the 38 years my parents were married, my grandmother made the marriage and my mother's life in particular a living hell.
Oh my God.
In 1984, Nana died, heart failure. And then my mother died 6 months later at only age 59. But then she had been an alcoholic, cross-addicted with a barbiturates for a pack a day smoker.
Right. Oh
my. So then my father was adrift. And a year later, he married Shirley, who could not be more different. Shirley knew who she was. She knew how to make things work, even if they weren't perfect. She was not threatened by my father's brilliance. She adored it. And she had a fabulous 17-year marriage with my dad. And she was the kind of stepmother we all wish we had. In fact, she's the one who threw the wedding for myself and my husband the year after Dad died, because I know that's what your father would have wanted.
Wow.
Now, Shirley was not good. My mother was not bad. It's just that.
Right.
Because they were, Shirley was not judged and my mother was.
Right.
My mother could never live up to perfect. Shirley knew there is no such thing. And wow. So could fashion her life differently. And I learned from that early.
Wow. That is, honestly, that's quite a story. I mean, I'm a perfectionist. And it's one of the most difficult things.
And here's an example of when you let go, the universe makes it perfect. Up to 2019, I was on the road 45 weekends a year, 45,000 miles a year on the car. My nickname was the Travel Channel because I loved doing expos. All of a sudden, I got a herniated disc and pinched nerve that made having triplets look like a tea party. When I was better, the doctor said, "Well, your career is toast. You're no longer going to be able to do load in, load out. You can't be in the car more than 2 hours. Oh. So from the fall of 2019, for about 4 months, I scrambled to get my business online. Finally did it. What happened in March of 2020 but the advent of the years of murder, hoarded bingo, and hold my beer? Now, all my friends who were still on circuit, their business tanked. I've never done better. And that was the universe saying, "We've been nudging you for several years. Wow. Get off the road. We're going to fix it now."
Wow. Boom.
Go wow. with the flow. There's perfection.
All right. Simplicity. What do you mean? Is that the voice in your head quieting the voice in your head?
It starts with, what do you have in the house? I mean, I grew up typical Cherry Hill, New Jersey, 2,500 square foot, 4-bedroom, 2.5-bath house. Dad was a doctor.
Right.
Now, I live in a tiny 864 square foot bungalow in the middle of one of the poorest counties in New York, in the middle of a hayfield. Not the same thing. These days, especially with inflation, with the fact that people can't really afford houses unless you're a one percenter, simplicity is the name of the game. How do you figure that out? You look at what really has meaning for you. Now, what has meaning for me? My favorite pair of yoga pants. My favorite frying pan where I make Carl's favorite fried eggs. My cards. That's where I spend time and effort.
Yeah.
But when I explain to people how to think like a tiny house, everybody in your family needs a toothbrush. They all don't need their own copy of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets.
Right.
So look at what you can share.
Right.
Look at what you've outgrown. I mean, so many of us have a closet full of clothes that looked really great on us in Bill Clinton's first year in office. I'm sorry, not on this figure now. Give it away. Vintage clothing or something, you know?
Yeah.
No, you don't have to give away your wedding gown, but the clothing that no longer fits, the clothing that's no longer you.
Right.
Give it away to a consignment shop where people who can't afford clothes
exactly
straight off can find them. do a garage sale, give the extra furniture to Catholic Charities, do whatever you need to do so that your house is streamlined. Right. Now, I'm not Marie Kondoing and say, get rid of all but 10 books. No, books are treasures. But how many bath towels do you need? Things like that.
So you're decluttering your physical environment.
Yes.
But you're also clearing out old habits, old patterns of thought.
Absolutely. All of it is important. For instance, when you're clearing out spiritual items, have compassion for where you were, but dump it. Bless and release. Change without condemning. Those are ways of clearing yourself out spiritually. Even that needs to be done. Mm. And the other thing I tell you is look at the kind of person you are. And for this, you can tell I'm old because I refer to one from this Rolodex. Who has a Rolodex anymore? There are the collections people. They're the ones who have to have all the Disney stuffed animals or depression glass or, you know, Star Trek figurines. There are the Rolodex people who collect people, but just, right. I want to say that I know you. I don't really care about you. Right. They've been there, done that people. They always have to be the first ones to go to a restaurant. They were the ones that were the deadheads that went to every single Grateful Dead concert.
I know.
For me, the connections people are the ones who have the most inside that they value. What's a connection person? Every Thanksgiving, you go and, for instance, in Atlanta, Georgia, there is a requiem for the homeless. And then the cathedral feeds 500 homeless people. You're not doing it to say, see, I'm good. You are doing it out of compassion, which means I am you.
Right.
You are appreciating your own abundance. You go home, you have a fridge with food in it. You have a home. You are blessing the person that you're giving a meal to. You are giving them a moment of hope. You are honoring them. You are saying your life is worth it. That's a connection that gives you, frankly, more than collecting something or collecting people or collecting experiences.
Yeah, I so agree. What do you mean by cleaning out happiness?
Cleaning out happiness is what makes you happy, really. That's kind of like, well, I used to really, really want to write a World War I romance novel. Nope, not going to happen because I've changed. And so I'm not unhappy that I'm not going to write it. I've moved on. One of the things I talk about is what I call 6 degrees of successful stumbling. All right, here's the example. I used to get fired from my jobs. I married the man of my dreams. How can you connect that? Listen, because I kept getting fired from my jobs, I decided I would work for myself. Because I decided I worked for myself, I discovered I didn't need to rely on a man for financial well-being. Because I didn't need to rely on a man for financial well-being, I didn't feel desperate to marry. Because I didn't feel desperate to marry, I chose to have relationships with men I could trust, not just men with money. Because I changed my parameters around who I would date, I met Carl. And because I met Carl, I discovered what I was seeking was not a guy with money, but an honest, funny, good-hearted, true blue guy. Yeah. And so I married the man of my dreams. When you get rid of what you think will make you happy, but it really doesn't, that's cleaning out your happiness so that you can get to the root of what really is going to be important for you.
Wow, that's actually quite powerful. I know everyone thinks they're searching for happiness, but in my opinion, that's just the wrong way to look at it. Aren't we truly looking for inner peace, mm-hmm. which is basically a neutral emotion? You're accepting, you're not judging.
I don't know. Neutral sounds very Vulcan and very Spock to me, much as yeah. I love Spock. But for me, peace is a bunch of kittens. It's not as Hallmark as it sounds, but you know, I've got I love Maine Coon kittens, but here's a Munchkin and here's a Sphinx. There's a little careless thing. When you're holding the kittens in your lap, you see what's the common thread? They're squirmy. They're funny. They're warm. They're you know, love in packages of fur and purr. When we don't judge, there is still love at the key of it.
Right.
Because when we don't judge and when we accept, we honor that they have their place in the world. Now, how can you accept something like the gun massacres? That's hard. That gets into karma. That gets into what we're trying to teach the world. The way I get through that is to remember that we're only down here in this particular recipe, one and done. Yes, the soul reincarnates time and again. Susan Corby, we're one and done. Those souls may have in their pre-birth plan said, short life, tough life, but if it makes a change in the world, it is worth it.
Mm.
So do I want the guns to stop? Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Do I hate the shooter? Because if I hate him, he can hate me.
Right.
It is possible to make change in the world, really work on it without hating. But these days, that's hard because especially in America, we are taught from the get-go, hate and fear is all that keeps you safe. You can make change, but you don't have to hate at the same time.
Okay. Wonderful advice. Okay. How can stress ever be a friend?
Stress is a friend. Well, there's something called eustress, E-U-S-T-R-E-S-S. And that's things like the excitement you get before you're going to go on stage, the sitting in the audience waiting to hear if you're the one who's going to get the Oscar, getting in the starting block when you're going to do a track race. That's good stress.
Right.
Bad stress is things like multitasking, always saying yes when you should say no, constantly rethinking and judging and pulling apart your responses to things. I mean, I don't tell, when someone comes to me like that, I look at them and I say, how old are you? And they say 34. I say, no, you're 68. What? Because no matter what your decision is, you then rethink it. So you're trying to fit 2 years of life in 1 year.
Stop. Right. Right.
And the two kinds of stress that I talk about so that you can understand stress. Stress is the shot across the bow and stress is mission creep. Shot across the bow is the Kubrick upside the head. We talked about my back injury, a simpler one. I was reading at one of my favorite coffee shops. They were having a big garden party event in the town. And I hadn't eaten breakfast, and it was read. And I was starving, so I grabbed a couple of raspberry bars off their bakery shelf and stuffed them in my face. Now, these are glorious raspberry bars, but they're full of fat and sugar. And so within 20 minutes, my heart started to race, palpitations. What was wrong? I looked it up, and too much sugar raises your blood pressure, heart palpitations, screws your brain. That was the shot across the bow. Don't do this.
Mm-hmm.
So now whenever there's dessert, I either don't bother, not that I deny myself, but I don't bother, mm-hmm. or I'll share it with my husband.
Right.
So the other example that I use, and here's one for all the mothers out there. A friend of mine is a farmer. She multitasks. She runs the farm. She writes a blog. She homeschools her kids. And eventually, the pressure got to be too much and she broke. And that's when she and her husband sat down and she found ways to stop doing what she was doing, ways to delegate. For instance, there are other families in the village who do homeschooling, and so now they split the tasks. So when you are overwhelmed and there's too much for you to do, you have to stop right there. Own it. And learn to say no. No is one of the most powerful things you've got in your arsenal.
Right. But
stick to it. Say right. No and mean it.
So this is a boundary thing. This is being very mindful how to recognize when stress is becoming detrimental.
and honor that it's detrimental to you. Don't say, well, everybody else can do it. Why can't I? No, that's dare, don't compare. Dare to give yourself the space you need. Don't compare yourself to others. It right. never works.
Right. Absolutely. And in this day and age of social media, my gosh, mm-hmm. it's so difficult. And I think yes. it's one of the reasons for the massive increase in mental illness. I was just reading some studies yesterday. Mm-hmm. It's kind of scary. I love the answer you're going to give to this next question because I know it already. Okay. What do you mean when you say you should be thinking like a Martian?
Everybody loves that. Thinking like a Martian is being totally open to anything, any answer. And the example I use is, let's say you and I were sitting across the table from each other and you had water coming out of your eyes. I'd probably say why you're crying, but I could be wrong. A Martian who has never been on Earth comes down with instructions from Orson or whoever that they are to examine human life and come back and tell stories. And so little Martian gets out of his flying saucer and toddles over to you and goes, why is there water coming from your eyes? He's all excited. Well, the Martian could maybe get a better answer than me, because maybe your contact lenses are bugging you, or maybe you've got allergies, or maybe there's an emotional basis.
Right.
And the most powerful story I have for that example, there was a guy who was married, he had a daughter. He was in a bad car accident and they put him back together, but his face basically looked like spin art. And he was terribly conscious of how ugly he was. And so he kind of walked around like, you know, one shoulder up like Quasimodo and Hunchback. Right. But he was still married with a kid. So he puts the kid to bed one night and the kid grabs his face, smushes it next to hers and says, this would be a great picture, but it would be better if mommy's face were in the picture. Now, if he had not learned about the Martian thing, he would have thought, even my daughter thinks I'm hideous, and it would have been lifelong trauma. Instead, he asked the question, why would it be better if mommy's face were in the picture? And the kid just looks at him and says, because mommy can't hold the camera still and you take good pictures. Uh-huh. One question, avoided years of trauma, and his daughter still loves him and just thinks he holds the camera better. That's all.
That is just a wonderful example. I just mm-hmm. love that. You have some great takeaways from your book.
I guess of all of them, the biggest takeaway should be, when you understand that your life experiences are as valid and authentic as any self-help book, you will be able to find your own answers, trust your own knowing, and design your own toolbox for life without looking for permission, without looking to see, was I right? It's your toolbox. You know what it should look like. You know which tools will work. And that changes your life.
What would you say to someone who sees your book, they're considering purchasing and reading it? What would you say to them?
Number one, thank you. All authors like to have their books purchased and read. Number two, only take from it what rings true for you. Toss the rest away. Write in the margins. If you open the book, you will see I gave people great big margins to write in. That was what John Adams, our second president, did when he would argue with law books, scribble, 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 and I love that. Truly, use it as a compassionate advisor, but it's not the be-all and end-all. Use what's useful, toss away the rest. And if you like it and you find it useful, suggest it to somebody else. When you're self-published, as I am, it is word of mouth that's going to make the biggest difference.
Right. Has your humor helped you along the way? I mean,
you have a
wonderful sense of humor.
Look, Susan, I've done stand-up comedy about You Think a Psychic's Life is Easy. I'm funny by nature.
You really
and
are.
When people laugh when they're with me, their shielding comes down. The information goes in.
Yeah.
A lot of psychics, coaches, they can come across as my aura don't stink. I know all this stuff, so you should listen. I think that's, forgive me, crap. We all have grumpy days. We all botch things. I can only teach from my experience. And so we're in this together. You know, it's like I have done 300 podcasts over the past 5-10 years. Why? Number one, I admit I love shooting my mouth off and having lots of people listen that I may not ever meet. Number two, I am by nature a teacher.
Right.
If I can fling this information into the universe and you pick up one piece that works for you, I'm like a kid who just got a gold star on my spelling. Right. I love that.
Yeah.
Humor gets us through so much. It really does.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I agree. I mean, there's physiological reasons why we should be smiling, laughing all the time.
Kicks up our endorphins.
Absolutely. So was there a point in your journey where you felt the biggest transformation? Was it the cancer surgery? I mean, how has your life radically changed?
Well, before the cancer surgery, I still had that Dolly Parton figure. And one of the challenges of my life, if you will, what I decided in my pregnancy planning session, is I had to learn to accept that women are not just their bodies, and I'm worth more than what I look like. I wasn't getting that lesson, which is why the cancer targeted the breasts twice. And the third time was a second primary, turned the danger clock back to zero. But the doctor said, tough, 3 strikes, you're out. So I figured out who I was going to be without the looks. And going back to the happiness is a choice, I had to find 3 reasons to be okay with what they were doing. Number one, you don't have them, you can't get cancer there. Number two, the top half was not going to get slammed in the refrigerator door at the doctor's every year, and every woman listening knows exactly what I'm talking about. 3, implants means I'll be perky till I'm 93. This is cool.
Yeah.
This is why I walked out of Mass General Hospital after a double mastectomy and reconstruction in 3 days, shopped for a bathing suit in 5. Who I am now is so much more delicious than who I was then. That was the seminal change.
So you feel an inner freedom?
Massive.
Yeah.
Massive. And to look at me, unless you knew what I did look like, you wouldn't know. And that's great.
Yeah. But that's a tough one. Female vanity. And particularly as you get older. Again, it's a societal thing. And it is an issue for massive amounts of women. Okay.
And interestingly, when you've never had kids, which I have not had deliberately, it sneaks up on you. I feel 40, but I look in the mirror and I look like a grandmother. But when you don't have kids who don't have kids, you don't have the mile markers. So it kind of goes boom. But that's one of the reasons why, for me especially, it's important. You know, Dolly Parton figure, literally it was 44 triple D, tiny waist and hips. Ain't there anymore, honey. Who are you without the looks?
Yeah, I know.
That was the freedom.
It just seems so simple, but it's so, so difficult. What's a daily non-negotiable for you? Are you a meditator?
I have to say no.
Okay.
Non-negotiable for me, cup of coffee in the morning, cuddling my 27-pound Maine Coon when I need him, and words. Words, words, words. Words are my drug of choice. I must write every day something. It's why I have a blog on medium.com. And I'm not signed up for the Mediumship Partner Program. You don't need to pay to see my stuff. But for me, if my words are out there and I'm hit by a bus tomorrow, I'm still here. I'm still teaching.
Right.
So those are my 3. Coffee, cat, words.
Okay. Do you have another book in the works?
Maybe. I say maybe because the 3 books I have, Clean Out Your Life Closet, The Psychic Yellow Brick Road, and You've Got the Magic Who Needs a Genie, all came from articles that I wrote that then presented themselves under a little banner that said, we're a book. So the more I write on Medium, the more my book is being percolated. And I'm sure there will be another one.
That's wonderful. So where can my listeners find you?
Susan, they can't avoid me. They really can't. First thing is my website, CorbyMitlai.com, which just got a massive renovation. So proud of it. Just gorgeous. You can find me on Facebook at Fire Through Spirit. You can find me YouTube, Pinterest, Instagram, Twitter, Patreon, Medium, all at Corby Mitlai.
Wonderful. You are a wonderful teacher because I've learned a lot in this hour, however long we've spent, and I've enjoyed every second of it. I really want to thank you.
Thank you.
This was great.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, give us a 5-star review, and share it with your friends. And join us next time for Lunch with a Healer. Share your thoughts with us. Your comments, questions, and suggestions are all welcome. Go to speakpipe.com/lunchwithahealer and record your message. Try it out today.